Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, this is BJ. Thanks for listening to our show's podcast. If you're a fan of all things geeky, you should check out my other podcast, BJ Shea's Geek Nation. We have new episodes every day, and you can check it out at BJGeekNation.com.
Your driver's license is important so you can get back and forth to work, get your kids to school, and back and forth to daycare. If your license has been suspended because you can't pay your tickets, you can't do any of those things. Let's talk about Chapter 13 bankruptcy. You may have heard that tickets cannot be discharged, but they can be dealt with in a Chapter 13 case. Why not come in for a free consultation? The chapter you choose will make all the difference to your getting back, legally, on the road. Let's design a plan to pay off your tickets and restore your license immediately. I'm Attorney Travis Gagné. Please contact me today at ChooseTheRightChapter.com. That's ChooseTheRightChapter.com.
99.9 KISW, the Rock of Seattle.
BJ, all day today is Seattle Rock Day. We're celebrating the music of the Pacific Northwest, and I'm very excited to have our next guest on, as he's been a big part of the Seattle music scene as a great Seattle music journalist, also a New York Times best-selling author. Please welcome to the show, Charles Cross.
Charles, hey. Good to have you, man. Good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks so much.
So, Charles, it's Seattle Rock Day. We also had the anniversary of Kurt's passing, and you, if anybody, is you're somebody definitely that has so much experience with this entire scene. Obviously, you're writing a great book about Kurt, and editor of Rocket Magazine for so many years here in town. We would just like to hear what you have for the fondest memories, things that you remember about what really made Seattle Rock Day Seattle Rock Day, which was the great music that happened here.
Oh, yeah. And some of the acts you've been playing in the few minutes that I've been awake, Mother Love Bone, the Presidents of the United States. I mean, the list of bands in Seattle that are great and put out incredible records do not begin and end with Nirvana and Pearl Jam. And there's so many great bands that put on, incredible shows and in clubs and went on to national success. Seattle has a lot to be proud about. It starts with our man, Jimmy. He really is the sort of font of all of this. What that guy did, a kid that grew up in the Central District, unbelievably poor, and went on and changed the world pretty much forever. That's the story that really proves that Seattle is a special place. And then it goes from there.
Hey, we're talking to Charles Cross. By the way, go to charlescross.com. You're going to see all of the great books that he's done, and really a lot of great stuff about some people like Jimmy and all the other great musicians that have been here in the Pacific Northwest.
And Charles, earlier we were talking to Bruce Fairweather from Mother Love Bone, and he was sharing a great story about, at first they were playing shows just in front of their friends, 30, 40 people, and then they played a show at the OK Hotel where there was about 400 people there, and they were all looking at each other like, who are all these people? What is going on? I mean, you've been a part of the Seattle music scene for so many years. Do you remember that moment as well as when it went from being, a scene of just peers showing support for each other, then all of a sudden there was all this attention that you're having people that you never even met, and you're like, oh crap, man, we're starting to blow up and things are getting kind of crazy here.
It came later than everybody thinks. I mean, I do remember Mother Love Bone getting big, and Andy was really a sweet guy. He would come in the Rocket office all the time and want us to write about him, which didn't happen. You guys have had people for in station things, but most bands did not show up at your door and knock. Well, that's what happened in the late 80s because it was so hard to get attention and bands were trying to break through. And he was a great self-promoter as well. But it really didn't happen when Mother Love Bone broke. They were one of the first to get a national label deal. They put a great record out and they started drawing people. But everything kind of broke a little later than people remember. It really started to happen in late 90. And then, of course, in 91, September 23rd is September 24th, the date that Nevermind is officially released. And it was like that was the sea change. You know, Nirvana plays at the Paramount on October 31st, 1991. It was not sold out. Wow. That's the one, you know, little fact that people, I think, forget. You could have walked up and gotten it was full, but it wasn't completely sold out. Obviously, that changed 24 hours later or 5 minutes later. I think you guys sponsored that show, that infamous Nirvana.
That was with Mudhoney and Bikini Kill, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Halloween show. But that just proves to you, everyone thinks it went crazy right away, and it didn't. But October, November, by 92, things were crazy. I mean, my crazy story on 92 is I'm traveling around the country. I'm in St. Louis. I see a poster on a pole for a band, and giant letters that said "From Seattle," bigger than the band's name. And wow. I'm looking at the band, and I'm the editor of The Rocket. I've never heard of this band. But that shows you how things changed, you know, by mid-92. Seattle became a name itself that meant something to the music world.
And we heard we're talking with Charles Cross, and when we were talking with Bruce, he shared a story of Kim from Soundgarden coming over and saying, "Hey, you got to listen to the new Nirvana record," which was Nevermind at the time. And Bruce had a funny story of just being like, I thought it was great, but I didn't think it was going to blow up the way that it did. For you, when you first heard that, what was your initial take? Because, I mean, you wrote such a great book about Nirvana and had such great experiences with the band. What was your take when you first heard Nevermind? Did you think it was going to become this 10 million copy selling record that it eventually became?
No one did. If anyone ever says that they thought that at all, they're lying. I thought it was going to sell 100,000. And I went to Nirvana's record release party, which was held at a little club. It's getting ripped down now. They're called the Rebar, not far from where your old offices are.
Yeah, that's sad, actually. That's getting ripped down.
You know, and, you know, I did have an interaction with Kurt there. It was Kurt and the guys from Sub Pop. And I said to them, you know, I'm the editor of the local magazine. I said, I think you guys are going to sell 100,000 copies with this. And Kurt's eyebrow lifted up. And the look on his face was like aghast. Like, are you effing kidding me? We're not going to sell 100,000 of this. And Geffen only made 40,000 pressing. I mean, the whole idea, there are people at the label who say they knew it was going to be a hit. They only made 40,000. They ran out. No one knew it was going to be that big. I thought it was going to be great. I knew that. But the idea that Nirvana were going to be the biggest band in the world and Pearl Jam would follow them, not a single person in Seattle, including the members of the bands, that thought that was going to happen. And sometimes they look back and say, yeah, we knew we had a hit with blah, blah. No one knew it was going to happen like that.
So, Charles, you, of course, writing so much about it, and we're talking to Charles Cross. Give him a tweet anytime you want, at Charles Cross. Charles, so Bruce was like, I guess he said he started noticing there were just other, like, young kids, just young people. He was just like, these are not the people that are our friends. Who are these young kids showing up? And obviously, glam rock was still doing what it was doing, the Poisons of the World. And, you know, upon reflection, what was it that made that album be such a hit? Was it speaking to people that just weren't being spoken to before, but nobody knew that?
Yeah, I mean, music had touched those elements. You know, Nirvana's Nevermind combined punk and pop. And you guys were playing the heck out of AC/DC, but nobody was mixing the Dead Kennedys in with that. And Nirvana combined both those elements into one thing. And what other kind of music fan you are, whether you were a hard rock fan or you were an alternative fan, there's no denying they just simply wrote some great songs. And those songs transcend to traditional music loyalties. Everybody loved Nevermind. Everybody loved it. And it became a record that when you went to anyone's house, you were certain to see that record. And I think it is important for people to remember that prior to Kurt's death, which sadly it was on this day 27 years ago when his body was discovered, so we first found out on April 8th, but prior to that, Nirvana were not as internationally huge, or he was an icon, but he wasn't a messiah. Some of those things changed with his early death. But there's still no denying that record. That record, you know, no one can analyze it and say why it's good. It just simply is good. It transcends the attempt to even explain why Smells Like Teen Spirit is so great. All you need to do is listen to it. And if you don't like the first 10 seconds of that record, then you either don't have blood moving in your system or you've never had sex in your life. Or you've never, or you've never been frustrated, you know?
You know, I do like that record, but you have described me to a T.
Exactly.
Charles, was there a band that you felt that you was shocked that, you know, like you said, everybody had no idea that Nirvana or Pearl Jam were going to break big. But then when things started going, you heard some of the great bands in the Northwest. Was there a band that you were surprised that never did get past like being a local great band and didn't become a big, huge band in the eyes of like the nation or the world?
Oh, absolutely. And I would give you 20, but it would start with the Fastbacks. It was Kim Warnick of the Fastbacks' birthday yesterday. The Fastbacks, you know, were just ahead of their time, but they wrote some great pop songs. If the President of the United States could have scored a hit with Peaches, which they should have, it's a great song, Fastback should have had a hit. Mudhoney never became as big as anybody thought. And Mudhoney was the band that everybody thought was going to break out of Seattle in 1989. The Rocket hosted a show on the turning of the decade. I think you guys might have co-sponsored it, but it was at the Paramount. And we picked 9 bands that we thought were going to be big for the 90s. And the only band that came that really blew out was Alice in Chains. And I remember, you know, introducing Lane and bringing them out. And that's the one band we were right on. Love Battery, the Posies, the Gits, Hammerbox, these other bands I thought were going to be bigger than they ended up being.
Well, Charles, I'll tell you, man, you have really done a lot to contribute to the legacy of what happened as you've chronicled just some of the cool stuff that's happened, plus really good explanations as to why things were the way they were. And if you want to check out Charles's work, go to charlescross.com. Like Steve said, he's got 3 New York Times bestsellers, 9 books that you can check out with, and a lot of them really covering great music that came out of the Pacific Northwest and out of this area. Charles, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, guys. And my website is actually Charles R. Cross with my middle name, and that's my
Twitter. Oh, yeah, there it is. You know what? I'm reading it wrong. Thank you, Charles. Charles R. Cross.
You're welcome. And thank you guys so much for playing this music. People forget that KSW also really helped launch this music. Without you guys, this didn't exist.
It was awesome. We got a text from someone saying, I'm 29 years old. I never even heard of Mother Love Bone, and I'm loving what I'm hearing right now. So it's kind of cool that here we are in 2021 that someone just got exposed to the music of Mother Love Bone.
There's new Mother Love Bone coming out. I'll just say that. You're going to hear it. Keep your eyes peeled. There'll be something else eventually here.
So. Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa. You can't tease me like this, Charles.
Wow.
What the hell? That's amazing.
There's a bunch of new stuff coming. A lot of bands. Wow, a lot of these bands are mining the archives during coronavirus. There is new stuff to come out.
But, that's very cool.
That is awesome. Charles, thanks again. And again, go to charlesrcross.com. That's charlesrcross.com. And, check out his stuff. And you can also tweet him at Charles R. Cross. Charles, thanks again, man.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Well, today is Seattle Rock Day, and we're going to chat with a guy that recently wrote a book about Pearl Jam called Not For You, Pearl Jam and the Present Tense. Ronan Givoni is going to join us at 8:17. On Seattle Rock Day, and we got Nirvana for you right here on The Rock.
BJ and Migs, mornings on The Rock, 99.9 KISW.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
99.9 KISW, the Rock of Seattle.
BJ, all day today we're celebrating the music of the Pacific Northwest with Seattle Rock Day. We love hearing all the stories from the Rockaholics, especially if you're on social media. Use the hashtag Seattle Rock Day. That way we can see all the stories. We can get it trending and all that fun stuff. And I'm very excited to talk to our next guest, BJ. He wrote a book called Not For You, Pearl Jam and the Present Tense. And here is our guest, Ronan Givony.
Ronan, welcome to the show, sir.
Great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Ronan, first off, I got to say, incorporating two of my favorite Pearl Jam songs in the title of your book, that's Not For You is such an underrated song. And Present Tense, in my opinion, is one of the greatest songs ever written.
Thank you. Yeah, the title was one of the first things that came to me. And Not For You, I feel like, just sums up quite a bit about the band in particular. So thanks for noticing that.
Well, I love, there's a part, I watched one of their show, I think it was the home shows, or no, it was the show they just put on Nugs, where it was like, I think it was over in England, and Eddie changed the lyrics to where it says seats just two in the song Not For You, and obviously he's talking about him and his wife, but in the new version, or in the live version, he says seats just four, and I was like, oh, I bet that's because of his kids, and I thought that was just such a cool little, like, you know, subtle throw-in of the change of lyrics.
Yeah, that's a song and a lyric that has definitely evolved. And, you know, it started out, you know, being kind of this sort of, you know, exclusionary thing, Pearl Jam kind of at their most, you know, self-loathing. And then as I think they came to terms with their fame and came to terms with their audience, it just opened up and became kind of a much more generous, you know, inclusionary song.
And we're talking to Ronan Givony. The book is Not For You, Pearl Jam and the Present Tense. It is a great book. You go search that out. Also, you can tweet him at PJ Not For You, and all the information will be there. Ronan, it is, of course, you know, Seattle Rock Day, and we're talking about all the great memories. And I'm wondering about you. What is your earliest memory of Pearl Jam or the Seattle scene in general that you have?
Yeah, you know, I guess a typical, you know, child of the 90s. I grew up, you know, in the early 90s. I was, you know, 12, 13 years old. And as a teenager in South Florida, you know, kind of glued to MTV, glued to the radio. MTV Unplugged, you know, I think has to be the first memory I have of, you know, I think there were the videos for Alive and for Even Flow before that, you know, but I think that that was sort of the first moment that most of us got to see them just perform, you know, and interact as a band. And there's so many special moments from that show. You know, I know the performance of Black from Unplugged is, you know, holds a lot of meaning for a lot of people. For me, Porch, you know, which was, you know, which was the finale as broadcast, but was, you know, sort of performed a little bit out of order in the original thing. You know, just the classic moment of, you know, Jeff climbing up on the drum kit and Ed on the stool. And then, of course, you know, pulling out the marker and writing Pro Choice. I mean, as a, you know, as a 12, 13 year old kid, I think it's just hard to overstate, you know, how momentous that image was and just what a, you know, kind of moral role model, I think Ed and, you know, his peers, you know, people like Michael Stipe and obviously Kurt Cobain and Zach De La Rocha, you know, we were kind of spoiled. And I don't think we even realized, that, you know, it was not always this way to have, you know, figures of male, you know, rock authority and charisma, you know, using their platform in that way.
It's funny hearing you talk about that because I remember that too. The performance of Porch is just on a whole other level for everything that you said. And also on top of that, that was like the moment where they said, hey, we're not this band that just plays our songs how you hear them on the record, because they just break down that song and jam off for a little bit. And when it all comes back together, it's like kind of sums up the magic of what Pearl Jam is live.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, most of the other songs, you know, were, I mean, they were stripped down and acoustic, but they were fairly faithful, yeah, I think, to the record. And Porch was the first song where, you know, especially just the instrumental breakdown, I think most of us, you know, just kind of kept watching that and being like, man, this is not a band that, you know, is content to just kind of replicate, you know, the sound. And I think for them, what was most amazing was it was kind of a tossed off thing. You know, I think that for a long time, they were not that, you know, proud or impressed of their own performance. They certainly could have, you know, sold a few million copies of that, you know, at any point in the 90s. And I think only recently, you know, they put it up on Spotify and such. And it's just, you know, I think that and obviously the Nirvana Unplugged, you know, it's I think that even for people who, you know, maybe it's been a while since they've listened to Pearl Jam, that is just a moment I think that is burned into a certain, you know, generation's memory.
We're talking to Ronan Gavoni, and the book is called Not For You, Pearl Jam in the Present Tense. And, of course, it is Seattle Rock Day. Ronan, basically, you know, rock has always been about righting wrongs. And I guess that was something you saw when you saw these performances where they just were basically, you know, they were fighting for social justice, which, of course, never gets old. You know, I mean, that is always something that is so important in society. If the influential do somehow speak out and go, look, we got to make things right. And is that what spoke to you? Did you as a kid realize it just ain't right? And this was like maybe the first group, like you said, the first group of somebody's that finally spoke something that you felt was true?
Well, you know, to be quite candid, I mean, I think at being 12 or 13 years old, I'm not really sure I appreciated or understood the magnitude of the issues that they were, you know, kind of bringing into public conversation, you know, whether it was pro-choice politics with Porch Unplugged or, you know, police brutality and Black Lives Matter, you know, with a song like WMA on Versus. Yeah. I think that Pearl Jam, you know, besides just, you know, the quality of their music, they really, you know, I think just taught a lot of us about a lot of things that, you know, now it's, you know, kind of second nature. But you know, it's important to remember that, you know, I think a month or two after, you know, they've performed Unplugged, you know, there was a massive march of, you know, 500,000 people in Washington, D.C., you know, on behalf of abortion rights. There was a Supreme Court case named, you know, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And this was kind of my point in trying to write the book, was that, you know, Pearl Jam, I think they were never really in a rush to kind of call attention to themselves, but they were really in the thick of this cultural moment. And on so many matters, I mean, obviously, you know, the war in Iraq and George W. Bush is something everybody knows about. But I think even as early as 1995, you know, when you see, you know, something like Self Pollution Radio, you know, which I think is just one of their highlights as a band, you know, Ed is talking in his monologue about Newt Gingrich. He's talking about the Republican, you know, revolution in Congress. And, you know, the overtones in, you know, just the last couple of years with our own country and you know, what happened in January, it's uncanny. You know, I think that they were really, you know, just prophetic in a way that I'm not sure that they even knew themselves at the time. And again, that was just my point in kind of writing about them from that angle. It is less that, you know, that was what stood out to me, but that, you know, from listening to a band for 20 or 30 years, it's just kind of an education in itself.
Well, Ronan, man, I do appreciate you and what you've done for the Seattle rock scene by writing such a great book about Pearl Jam and also your love for everything that's come out of here on Seattle Rock Day. It's been great to have you on. Again, check out his book. It's called Not For You, Pearl Jam in the Present Tense, Ronan Gavoni. You can tweet him at PJ Not For You to check that out. Go to RonanGavoni.com. Ronan, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks again for having me, guys. It's been an honor.
It is Seattle Rock Day, and of course, a lot of great stories are coming from you at 206-421-ROCK, text us at 77999, and I think we got one from Josh on Whidbey Island. Josh, you are on the rock.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Josh. What you got? What's a memory you want to share with us, man?
So, back in late 93, Pearl Jam coming home for their Versus album tour. Right place, right time, put my foot on the rail. Tried to leap up on the stage, got two guards holding my legs, and a hand comes down and says, "Hey, everybody, this guy wants up on stage." And Mr. Eddie Vedder pulls me up.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ends up pulling me up, starts dressing me in a bunch of stuff, clothes that people have thrown up on stage.
What? Is that
a bra and stuff?
No, like a TJ Maxx button-up shirt, a hat, put a sweatshirt around my waist.
That's awesome.
Mike McCready labeled me the grunge guy, and then gave me a pull off his bottle of wine, which I was thirsty as all get out, so I took a big, long pull off of it and handed it to him. He looked at me, kind of shrugged, took a drink. Told me to give him the best stage dive I could, and then I looked down. I was like, "What about my shoe? I'm missing a shoe." And so he goes, "Hey, everybody, this guy lost his shoe." Asked me what size I wore, and I said 10 and a half. He asked the crowd for a shoe, and about 50 shoes fly up on stage.
No, of course.
So he helps put one on, and then, you know, tells me to give him the best stage dive I can. They break out. I jump off one of the monitors, and they break out in the song Porch.
Oh, damn. What a cool moment.
Wow.
One of the greatest memories I have.
I love all the fans like, "You need a shoe? I've got shoes. Here you go."
Yeah, my brother was in the crowd, and he was wearing a pair of shoes I had, and he was like, "Oh, I should throw a shoe up." He had it in his hand. He said I'd recognize it and didn't have the chance, but...
Yeah. I love the fact that you still can remember that. That's the beauty. The beauty of that is that you do remember that, which means you didn't go too hard.
Well, the three or four Mickey's 22 ounces, I don't remember too much but that.
It's great that your mind was like, okay, we're going to forget a lot tonight, but we're not going to forget this.
I just have a bunch of people are leaving that show without their shoes.
Yeah. I know, you know, man, yeah. I mean, a lot of people having a good time, Steve.
Like, I love Pearl Jam, and I'm all for supporting the fans that are up on stage, but you sure as hell I'm not getting my shoe. I don't even care about the same size. Like, no.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, there's a lot of things. You can have my wine, but you're not getting my shoes. Yesterday, Steve, he did get this one wrong.
What 73 Michael Crichton film was turned into a 2016 HBO TV series?
Shameless?
No.
Jack Reacher?
No.
Tom Clancy?
No. The East Siberian
Jack Ryan?
No.
Sorry, buddy. You were way off. It was Westworld.
I wasn't even close.
Yeah. You want a shot at beating Steve, you got it. 206-421-ROCK. We'll be playing Beat Migs at 847. And today is Seattle Rock Day, and we've been talking a lot about these guys. So how about some Pearl Jam on the rock?
Today's podcast was brought to you by Travis Gagne, bankruptcy attorney. He's here right now and has agreed to answer more of your questions about bankruptcy.
Here's a question from a listener. My house is currently in foreclosure. I've stopped making payments. What can I do to save my house?
If you're already in foreclosure behind on your mortgage, you can stop the foreclosure by filing a bankruptcy. There's different types of bankruptcy. Chapter 13 can help you catch up on your house payments if you're behind. It would mean that you'd have to start making your house payments again and catch up on the amount that you're behind over 5 years. You could also take off or strip off your second mortgage, which would help you to reduce your housing payment every month, especially once you're done with the plan and done catching up on your first mortgage. We could also try to buy you some time by filing a Chapter 13 case. Filing a Chapter 13 would definitely stop your foreclosure.
Thanks, Travis. If you have more questions about bankruptcy, you can reach out to Travis anytime at ChooseTheRightChapter.com. That's ChooseTheRightChapter.com. And thanks for listening.